back to the Inbalance Podcast. My name is Jim Simon. I am the Director of Sustainability at Gonzaga University. And I'm joined by my co-host, Kelsey Solberg, who is the Director of Professional and Community Education in the School of Leadership Studies.
Long title.
Long title. The Inbalance Podcast animates Gonzaga University's CREATE model for sustainability through interviews, conversations with students, staff, faculty, and community members who are all practicing sustainability on campus and in our region. Today, we were joined by Colin Quinn Hurst. He's an associate planner with the City of Spokane. And I know that Colin has worked a lot on some of the really awesome mobility projects that you or anyone has seen in the region and Spokane in the last few years. So we were, I'll speak for myself. I was excited to have Colin on the podcast today.
Yeah, he was a great guest. I think learning, I mentioned this at the end, but like just hearing the two of you talk about this so much was really fun for me because it's not an area that I know a lot about.
Sure,
and just
sure.
Learning what's going on in our favorite little city was really interesting. Yeah,
I nerded out. I love this stuff. I was involved with it a lot back in Buffalo. I think what stood out for me with the conversation was Colin really pointing to the simple things.
Yeah.
That we don't need big flashy venture capitalists to come in. We just need to make the foundation really strong and focusing on safety, that kind of safety versus volume. You know, we want safe streets so that people move through them with ease. It was really, really wise counsel.
Yeah. I think I was coming in thinking about transportation and mobility so much in terms of like infrastructure. So what do people have access to? And what I think was helpful in this conversation was thinking more about behavior. So I recognize that it's the humans that are using these different types of transportation, but really learning like what allows for people to feel safe, what encourages certain behaviors was just really, really interesting. And I think kind of gave me a different way to look at it.
Yeah. I hope that folks that listen to this conversation maybe view their walk, their drive, their bike ride through whatever space they're in after they listen differently. And maybe you'll notice how the streets were formed, how easy or how hard it might be to get around, and then maybe do something about it.
I love that.
Yeah. So enjoy. Welcome, Colin.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Yeah.
Glad you're here. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself? What's your story? Who are you? Big philosophical question. How did you end up in Spokane?
Yeah, I grew up here.
Well, that explains
that. It's a good
start. I left my junior year of high school and that was like around 2000, and then came back in 2018.
Okay.
Yeah, roots here is the main thing, growing up here. And then after kind of bouncing around a few different places and having a young kid, realizing that Spokane's a great place to grow up and wanting to come back and kind of make our home base here.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Did you grow up in Spokane proper or the Valley or?
Yeah, I grew up, as off Manitou Boulevard, kind of my 29th grand.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I was in the same house for the first 17 years of my life.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Where did you go to school?
I went to Hutton Elementary and Sacagawea and Lewis and Clark.
Nice.
So all kind of within the same, you know, 15 minutes, basically. But grew up walking to school and then, you know, getting rides on bikes to school from my parents. So I feel like it's just kind of like embedded to walk and bike around. Occasionally walking home from Lewis and Clark when I missed the bus, which was
uphill.
Yeah.
It was quite a hike.
Good incentive not to miss the bus.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I feel like you're kind of, this was kind of a segue, but what got you interested then in transportation and mobility?
Yeah, I think that was part of it. Just growing up doing that. And then in college, I went to school in Anchorage and they had this amazing greenbelt system where some wise people decades ago said, we're going to keep our creeks. We're not going to put them in culverts and put them under downtown streets or anything like that. We're going to maintain them and put pathways along them. And so they had this system of like, I think 5 or 6 creeks that came down from the mountains and like just filtered out like fingers through the city and just great pathways for getting around for commuting, but also for recreating. And then in the winter they would groom them for skiing. And so I spent a lot of time just using them and thinking, and they kept building them out too and connecting them. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, how do I be part of this? Like, this is really interesting. And I was flipping through the course catalog and there was an environmental planning major and I didn't really actually read it much after seeing the title.
You're like, that sounds good.
I was like, I think that's it. I think that's how I do this. And it lined up, but you know, coming back to sustainability, one of our senior classes focused on different aspects of campus and the sustainability impacts and the greenhouse gas and climate impacts. And my area was transportation that I got assigned, and people were looking at waste and other things. But transportation, just seeing like the share of greenhouse gases caused by transportation really hit me. And then so that became my senior project, was going further with that and developing an active transportation plan for the campus. And it's kind of been that got me off on this path.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I love that. The decision to make those pathways along the river, the streams, I think just moving people, moving water, just, I don't know, just sticks out to me.
Yeah. It's like following the natural infrastructure that's like already there.
Yeah. And it provided kind of like the Centennial Trail here. It's just this great backbone to build off of. Yeah. So many things, like people would fish in them and play in the streams, like very unexpected uses.
Yeah. And you said they groomed them first. So like Nordic skiing in the winter.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
They're going to say that people skated on the streams too, but that'd be amazing.
I didn't see too much of that, but definitely on the ponds. Yeah.
So you went to school, you were kind of out and about till 2018, came back to Spokane. I know you ended up at the Valley first. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a 1-year-old and we're like, we were in Utah, in Salt Lake, which is a great place too. Like, definitely a great place to live. But we were just thinking, where do we want to be? Mm-hmm. And I came back to visit my family in the summer, and a job came up at the Valley, and so I called them and just started talking with them, and it's like this great chance to come back to Spokane.
Nice.
Yeah. And we visited a couple times over the years. Usually we're going out to Idaho or other places, but we stop in at like Main Street down by the community building or a couple places, and my wife said that made a big impression on her, and was like, oh, there's these kinds of things here. I can definitely see myself living in Spokane.
Yeah.
And so just a few spots around town made the decision pretty easy.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. That Main Street block, the Saranac block, is inspiring.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What gets you excited or excites you about transportation and mobility? I know that we've had a bunch of conversations over the last few years about for lack of a better term, cool projects that are like happening elsewhere they want to bring here, things that could be opportunities but maybe not just yet for us. What's exciting for you?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many things in transportation that people are trying out right now. Mm-hmm. And what excites me the most are the simplest things. So just the basics of providing multiple options for getting around. So mm-hmm. making sure people can walk safely, can bike safely, can use the bus. And I guess what excites me the most is finding ways to link all those options and finding out how they complement each other. Mm-hmm. So as the City Line buses go in, for example, with the Bus Rapid Transit, making sure that you can safely walk and bike to those stops. Mm-hmm. I think just getting those basics right mm-hmm. Is what excites me. And providing options. I heard a quote not too long ago that freedom in transportation, at least, isn't being able to drive anywhere you want. It's mm-hmm. being able to get there any way you want, mm-hmm. like to have, you know, all these options on the mm-hmm. table. And I think, you know, there's a lot of new things coming out, like technology wise with autonomous vehicles and, mm-hmm. You know, working from home with new technology. And to me, a lot of those things are kind of like the icing on the cake, like electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. And those are like kind of mitigation, making things a little bit better, but they aren't a substitute for getting the basics right. Mm-hmm. You know, just providing those fundamental walk, bike, bus networks yeah. that Spokane was built around. I mean, mm-hmm. our history is a streetcar city, mm-hmm. A walking city. I mean, our periods of biggest growth were before the automobile. So a lot of the things we've seen are kind of adapting a walking city to be a car city,
yeah.
which I think gives us a huge head start. A former planning director, Lewis Mueller at the city, mm-hmm. used to say that Spokane's so far behind on some things that we're actually ahead. And I think it's true, especially with transportation. Mm-hmm. Like we have this great kind of backbone for our street network that we can easily shift some of that space back to the way it was originally used. And I don't know. I mean, we've talked a lot about electric vehicle sharing, and it seems like with shared vehicles, that's a big opportunity as well, because yeah. technology is making it easier and easier to share those things where it's not like
absolutely.
You have to pass around a key or a lock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think libraries, as they transform over time, as community spaces and community resources, like we've talked about how, and I think in some cases, maybe already there are hubs for different resources like this at our public libraries. I think Avista is doing some work with the electric vehicles, like car share or sharing from the downtown library, if I recall correctly.
Right.
Do you know much about that?
Mm-hmm. Not a lot. I just know that libraries and parks have been kind of fundamental
yeah.
in that. And just with how libraries are changing to be a library of things too, like mm-hmm. renting out sewing machines or whatever it is mm-hmm. that makes sense for bike
yeah.
to be part of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the neatest things that I experienced over the summer, especially after getting an e-bike, cargo e-bike, was going down Cincinnati and turning right onto, is it Spokane Falls Boulevard? And there is that right lane is blocked off for bikes. Mm. I think of you every time I'm on that because I wonder if it's a sneaky way to demonstrate that we can have like a cycle track in the city. And because it's nice to have an entire lane to travel on a pretty busy street, and one will get busier once the bridge is completed. Mm-hmm. Is there a truth to that?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to that community effort in 2019.
Yeah.
Spokane in Motion, which was led by the council office, to do a demonstration project. So there was that workshop where a Danish cycling expert came and gave us some ideas, but you know, 20, 30 people came together and mapped out the area and looked for an opportunity to test something new out. And that section of Spokane Falls on the bridge that you mentioned kind of rose to the surface as an opportunity. I mean, four lanes in each direction, mm-hmm. not that much, you know, vehicle traffic for how much space and how many lanes there are.
Yeah.
And so there was that like 14-day test of a two-way cycle track. And I mean, that was amazing. I mean, it was pretty self-selected survey, but the survey results showed that, you know, before that went in, like 80% of respondents said that they don't feel safe biking around that area.
Yeah.
And that with that change, that just did a 180 and 80% felt safe.
Wow.
And well, felt safe or very safe. And that only like 5% felt unsafe. So I think that was kind of proof of concept.
Yeah.
But so when the Don Cardon Bridge went under construction, the plan initially was to just route the whole trail onto the sidewalk there behind that barrier.
Oh, yeah.
And the Parks Department was great. And they decided to come to the Bicycle Advisory Board and run it by the group and to see, like, is this enough? Mm-hmm. And the board was like unanimous, like, no, that's not enough. Mm-hmm. We should do more. And so using the fees that we get from Lime operating here, so Lime pays us to operate, we paid Parks to put in that better detour with the thought in mind is that it's like a longer term pilot of closing that lane. And so right now we're talking with Parks and traffic about just leading that up and improving it and extending it. But we're running out of time because the bridge opens in December.
It does.
Oh, it does.
I don't think I knew
that's
that.
Fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a very timely discussion.
Yeah.
And it's not resolved yet.
Okay. I appreciate that little stretch. It's kind of, you feel free. Talked about freedom earlier. Like, I made a choice and I'm able to, for that little bit, do it with less concern about getting hit by a large vehicle.
Yeah.
Do you think it's enough what's out there?
I think you do more. I think right now the color orange in my mind is often associated with construction and temporary. So construction ideally is temporary. And so when I see it, like I think it's not going to be there and the next time I'm on the street.
Right.
And like for someone who uses it for a mode of transportation, like coming down Cincinnati and then being surprised that right turn you're making is different than the previous day, that's a big deal. In a car, someone would call 311 if all of a sudden there was an unannounced detour or change. And so I think maybe the stanchions could be a different color.
Yeah.
Maybe white. I think white you see in those lanes in other cities are like, oh, this is permanent.
For sure.
Maybe some kind of jersey barrier, which is also temporary, really. But if there's art on it, it seems less temporary.
Yeah.
And then maybe some more permanent painting on the ground would show permanence. So
for sure. Yeah. When you're behind the orange wands, you kind of feel like you're in a construction zone.
Yeah.
Isn't that.
Should I be here?
Yeah.
I know the first few times, if it wasn't for the sign that said bikes go here, I wouldn't have known because it just looks like it's the lane is blocked.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. It feels like there's work going on in that space. And the goals is to connect the U District Gateway Bridge, because it kind of drops people off in the U District, and then they kind of find their way through. Do you have any thoughts on the best way through there?
I mean, you go off the bridge. The exit from the bridge is a little awkward. You kind of have to like jump off onto a sidewalk, or you have to ride on a sidewalk. And then you go down to the intersection, there's the stop sign for you, and then you turn right onto the bike lane. I think maybe like a Sharrow on that would at least indicate, okay, I'm on a bike, this is the direction I should be heading.
Okay, so wayfinding.
Yeah, wayfinding. Yeah.
Yeah. We recently had someone from the State Department of Transportation come into town to do a little training. He's a transit specialist and he was talking about, you know, what makes people feel comfortable taking transit, and we're out there looking at that station or that new City Line station at Spokane Falls by the bridge, And it's amazing. Like, there's the raised crosswalk. There's the protected bike lane behind the loading platform. And he said, this is great, but it needs to continue. Like, it can't be just the station. People need to feel comfortable getting there, too.
Yeah.
When you came in and we were talking about biking a little bit, and you asked me, you know, are you biking too? And I said, I'm a fair weather biker. And as I'm thinking about, like, we've talked a little bit about freedom, and I think that's so much of the reason that I just prefer, I drive my car, and like, I've never ridden the city bus in Spokane. I have lived here for 90% of my life, and I've never taken public transportation. And so sorry. but it just has me thinking, like, what are my barriers? And I know that for me, it's like convenience or time. And I live in a place that's very close to most of the places that I'm going, and I have access to the Centennial Trail. So I'm someone who has, like, even less barriers, I would think, for biking or walking. And I'm just curious, like, what else do you think are people's biggest barriers or their biggest challenges in, like, using more of these alternative forms of transportation? And like you said, kind of going back to the basics and keeping it simple, like, what do you think will get people to use it? And that you might be asking yourself the same question every day, but I'm just curious your thoughts.
No, I think there's one theme I hear from people. So I think one fun thing about working for the city is that people tell you what needs to happen.
Sure.
And everyone's a transportation expert, and really, like, for sure, because everyone's out there every day in the network.
Yeah.
So you get to hear all the good ideas. And the main theme I hear repeatedly is making sure everything's connected.
Mm.
And you know, safe and comfortable too, for sure. Like, and even the stretches that we do have of bike lanes that are just striped are okay, but you know, people like to see high quality. But apart from that, connecting everything is that people a lot of times will go out for a bike ride, and they're like, okay, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to commute to work. I'm going to try this. And they're able to get, you know, maybe 75% of the way there, you know, have a good experience most of the way, but they get to that one street crossing that's super dangerous. You're crossing five lanes and there's no way to stop traffic, or there's a blind corner. And that's enough for a lot of people who are just trying it out to be like, nope, I'm out. Yeah, I'm not doing this again.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing as far as removing barriers, I think, for Spokane is connecting things. And it's an exciting time because there's a lot more funding around safety. So we have a lot of unsafe streets. We have a lot of great local neighborhood streets that are really comfortable to walk and bike on.
Mm-hmm.
They're low traffic, they're connected, there's a great grid. But there's that one or two, you know, arterial street crossings on your way to work or downtown or wherever you're going that are kind of deal breakers. And now there's a lot of funding coming through to fix those. So through the state, they have bike ped grants, and they're putting more and more funding into those grants, more and more funding into city safety grants. And then the federal, in the infrastructure bill, they have this Safe Streets and Roads for All program that's totally focused on that, is improving the safety of those streets. So I think there's more and more opportunity to fix that issue of connectivity. And so a good example right here is, you know, we talked about the Cincinnati Neighborhood Greenway.
Yeah.
We're currently building a project on Illinois Avenue on the bluff up there.
Oh yeah.
And it's putting a concrete curb in to protect the bike lane along the bluff. So it's a two-way bikeway along the bluff.
Yeah.
And that'll link into Cincinnati. And that Illinois project will link into Cook Street, which goes by the Shaw Middle School campus. And Cook Street got funding through the state infrastructure program, through a recent infrastructure bill, to become like a neighborhood greenway. And the focus of that is to improve all those arterial crossings. Mm-hmm. So once you think about those three projects, you can come down from Hilliard on Cook, take Illinois in, protect it, take Cincinnati in, and be on the Centennial Trail. And it's this kind of funnel. And I think the more projects like that throughout the city that we line up, that's going to go to that issue of that gap, that barrier where there's just that really scary crossing. A long answer. But
no, that's great. And like you said, it just takes one of those crossings to kind of deter people.
Yeah. Are there any other barriers that you found?
Yeah, not from my perspective. I mean, I think, again, for me, like, this has me thinking about my own kind of just leaning into convenience, truly. And so kind of rethinking that a little bit for myself, too. Like I said, I'm pretty easy access where I live now. I used to live on the South Hill. And unless y'all could flatten that, I'd probably ride my bike downtown less often. But yeah, I think that, to your point, like, the connection of some of those pieces is so important.
Yeah. And this is kind of unrelated, a little bit related, but as far as convenience goes, one thing that kind of flew under the radar, but that changed recently, is that as the city council is integrating the state, updates the state code, they removed the helmet mandate for city of Spokane. So there used to be a law on the books dating way back that to ride a bike in Spokane, you had to wear a helmet. Mm-hmm. And that has been found in most cases to be a barrier. It's like one more obstacle to getting on your bike. Mm. If you feel like you have to put on a helmet, it's one more thing to buy, one more thing to keep track of. And it's just one more step. And, you know, it can be uncomfortable. And so what they found is that helmet laws reduce the number of people biking because it's kind of an obstacle. And the number of people biking is the biggest predictor of safety than wearing helmets. So if you remove the helmet law and more people bike, then everybody's going to be safer because there are more people out on the streets. People are more used to seeing bikes and drivers are more aware and then there's better infrastructure. So it's kind of this virtuous cycle. And the helmet law is just one piece that's in the way of that.
That's interesting. It seems counterintuitive, but it makes sense.
Yeah. Hmm. And then it gets to equity too, because it's not being enforced for most people, but when it does get enforced, it's kind of a red herring. Yeah. It's used to catch someone who they suspect of another crime, which has a lot to do with, just kind of targeting certain people more than others. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, total tangent.
No, that's great. That's why you're here. We love tangents.
I've been thinking a lot. We talked about freedom. Yeah, freedom. But also I've been thinking a lot about choice, being in front of a couple presentations at the ACT conference this year and in the past about as we look to evaluate, maybe change how we do parking on campus. Right now, if you want to park on campus, there is a fee, and it is less than you'd experience in a lot of other places. Mm-hmm. And so there really isn't, it doesn't facilitate choice. And so if one were to consider, a different parking structure on campus where it was like daily parking, then it becomes, every day they're deciding that they have to pay. And even if it's, $2 or less, that has this perceptive addition in their mind. Like, I'm paying, this is my cup of coffee. But it could be less than what they're paying annually. But like, I think daily parking is an opportunity to really change how we do transportation here, because all of a sudden you are evaluating how you're getting to campus, and you're doing it with the commute alternatives in the mix. So it might be, I'm gonna bike today. Mm-hmm. I felt really great biking and that didn't cost me anything.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna bike more.
Yeah, totally. I think it's probably still true, but when I was working on that active transportation plan in college for the campus, that was the number one recommendation, was to increase the cost of parking.
Yeah.
And put that money toward other things. And the main reason was financial for the campus. It was like, it was better for the campus financially because free parking generates more people parking. And then you're like, oh, we need more parking. We need to build a structure.
Yeah.
And structures have this kind of counterintuitive impact of, they're so expensive to build, you have to charge more. And so that then the demand for parking goes down. And because you're charging so much to pay off this structure, mm-hmm. and then you're like in this kind of, you know, downgrade, this spiral where you're charging more and more for parking because people, less and less people are parking there. And then, so what they found is that if you can avoid building a parking structure and shift all these people to other modes, mm-hmm. you save money, but then you can also use that land for building academic buildings, yeah. or residential buildings.
Yeah.
And so that you're not having to expand the campus or tear down old buildings. So I think there are a lot of reasons why it's good, but in making the case for it, the one that seemed to strike home with the administration at that campus, at least, mm-hmm. was that it was a smart decision financially yeah. for them.
Yeah.
There's like such an element of social science in this, of just like, I don't know, like behavioral pieces of it too, of
100%.
Like, yeah. It's just so interesting.
Yeah. And there's some programs out there, like the parking fee in lieu, like you get paid every day to come to campus and you get paid like, okay, this is how much you pay for parking. Mm-hmm. So we'll give you that. But if you don't drive, you just get to keep that money. Wow. So it's, you get paid to not park, basically.
Yeah. I love that idea.
Yeah. I mean, I think that those are the ideas that would, I think, shift our landscape quickly, mm-hmm. just the way the culture is here
yeah.
and a lot of other places. Mm-hmm. When you're incentivized to do something, people do it.
Are there conversations around that right now?
I think we're considering looking at how we do parking, looking at like a daily model, just beginning stages of discussing it. I think it, all the things you could imagine, you know, your, you know, less resources in enforcement, mm-hmm. You know, it could be, less burdensome on some people if they, only drive a few days a week, mm-hmm. but they're, buying a pass that, so they might pay less. I think one thing to consider is just the equity of like, if you're asking someone to pay daily for parking, you know, what does that look like? I think with technologies these days, you can make some really easy and discreet, ways to allow folks that maybe need, a little more support to park on campus. But just with like some kind of code, instead of putting in their license plate, or when they do put their license plate in, that plate is like, oh, that's a zero charge. Mm-hmm. So when they figure out who's parking there and it gets run through, it's like, oh, not charging them today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's one of the benefits of all the new technological advances in
yeah.
transportation is things like that, where you're just automatically in the system and
right.
recognize. And I think we can keep improving that for the shared mobility program with Lime too,
yeah.
and promoting that. Because right now they have what's called the Lime Access program, mm-hmm. where if you're on any social service program, you get half off all your rides.
Yeah.
You just need to show them the documentation of that. And that's pretty discreet. You know,
yeah.
thing to do, like you said, where you just submit that and all of a sudden you get half off all your rides. Mm-hmm. And other cities, and something that we'll be able to do here pretty soon, is they also create equity zones mm-hmm. throughout the city. And that's one of the amazing things about these shared vehicles that are all, you know, GPS attached, is that you can create zones in the city where it's cheaper to ride and where you mandate minimum numbers of vehicles. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Then you might get less rides
yeah.
in that part of the city.
Yeah.
So it's makes less financial sense for the company to put vehicles there, but there might be higher need in that part of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And so the city can create minimums.
Mm. That's exciting.
Yeah. You've touched on some of the projects that are happening in Spokane. I wonder if there's any more that you think are worth highlighting, you know, like what are we doing well here in Spokane?
Yeah, good question. I'd like to hear from both of you too. Like, what do you think's working? And so it's easy to lose sight of the forest for the trees when you're kind of down in these projects.
Mm-hmm.
But I think transit is the biggest thing going for us right now with the city line improvements mm-hmm. and plans for division. I think we need to jump on that momentum and really build off that.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, with connecting our walk and bike networks to those stations that are so great, which just boosts ridership even further and increases the frequency. And then building our land uses around those stations too, providing residential opportunities right by those stations so that you can live right there and just walk over to the station to get where you need to go. And then the mix of uses by those stations too, so that you can live there, but you can also walk downstairs, do your lawn, dry cleaning, get a cup of coffee, shop, and then get on the bus or do it on the way home. Mm-hmm. So, from so many angles, just capitalizing on that investment that's being made. I mean, with the city line right here outside the door, basically, that's $92 million of investment. And most of that isn't locally paid for. A lot of that's federal money. Mm-hmm. I think we're doing that well. And I think we have a great, like I mentioned earlier, just a great backbone of our street network that was built at a time when we weren't driving a lot. And so we have that to fall back on and really capitalize on.
Yeah.
What do you think? What do you see going well?
I think the city line is amazing. I present to new employees every month at Gonzaga, and I talk for a moment about transportation and, Commute Smart Northwest and how to plug in. And I've been mentioning the city line the last few sessions pretty specifically, that it's coming soon. And, these are people that have been in a small room for a few hours, and they're new, and there's a lot of information, and you can kind of see sometimes the glaze over look of like, wow, this is a lot. But like, when I mention the city line, people pop up. When I say that a bus is coming every 7.5-8 minutes through campus, that's like super exciting. So I think that's awesome. I think the art that's associated with the wayfinding and the design aspects is amazing. We, at the Washington State Ridesharing Organization Conference in September, Spokane Arts came and presented on the art, and it was the best presentation of the conference, in my opinion, and I think for other people too. It was just really, I felt really proud to be in a room at a presentation about the city that I live in. That was just so, it was so neat. Mm-hmm. And the artists are just so wholeheartedly involved in designing the specific places. So I think that's really neat. I've loved the work that we've done at that little mobility plaza right on Cincinnati. I think it's been really neat to see kind of placemaking take shape. I take great pride in seeing people sit at those tables and benches and the flowers that grow there now. It's just, we made a under $500 investment in a space, and people are sitting there and enjoying that space. Mm-hmm. It's just a pad of concrete. It's just awesome. And I think once, like you said, almost if you build it, they will come. Like, when you create place, then people slow down and they consider other ways of being and being present.
For sure. Yeah. It doesn't have to be expensive or complicated.
No, mm-hmm. No.
And I know one part of that was interesting was with the pollinator gardens.
Yeah.
And those, have you heard if they're having the desired impact of tracking bees and that type of thing?
I don't know. I did run into the faculty member who kind of helped with that. And I think we talked about it, and he was still excited. Cool. I think you can see him in the summer walking around with his students catching insects. So maybe there's now one more little pocket where they can do that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It'd be great to keep building on that project.
Yeah.
It's a really fun project.
I think we could put more planters there. And I thought about putting a giant Jenga or Connect Four, but I feel like that's an invitation for a gift. It's a gift to someone.
Yeah.
You can skirt the camera. It's yours.
I was really surprised. I mean, pleasantly surprised by the tables and chairs, though, not really disappearing too much.
Yeah. So we're talking about, so the city and Gonzaga each bought a few tables and chairs for that plaza. And they were maybe there in like May, June, and through the summer. Mm-hmm. And then unfortunately, around the time that a certain cohort of human beings returned to our campus, the tables and chairs started disappearing. Mm-hmm. So just kind of a bummer. I mean, hopefully they're being used wherever they are.
Yeah.
I think I ended up pulling them. And it was just like a week before we would have had to pull them.
But, okay.
But that's the experiment of tactical urbanism, mm-hmm. is you know that what you just did could be gone or be changed. It's still worth the investment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a bummer, but I wasn't disappointed.
Yeah.
I was just like, okay. Mm-hmm. That happened. It didn't happen as soon as I thought it would.
Yeah.
I run down Cincinnati most mornings, and I knew that they disappeared because almost every morning I count them.
Inventory.
Kind of brace myself. there was that one morning I was like, oh, one is missing. And I stopped and I like counted again. I was like, yeah, one's gone. And then a few weeks later, I was like, oh, there's a few more.
Yeah. The ratio for the amount of use they got.
Yeah.
Summer.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Keep trying. Do you have any other ideas for that space?
I'd love to talk about having events there and what that looks like from a city Gonzaga kind of shared, you know, responsibility, liability perspective.
Yeah.
It could become a nice gathering space for small events, outdoor events, concerts, things like that. Not if anyone's listening, it's not actually happening. Just ideas.
It's a really cool thing about these transit lines is, you know, shifting so many trips onto those frequent buses frees up the road space, the public right away that's owned by the public, to do other things with it.
Mm-hmm. It could become a food truck plaza.
Right.
We already have food trucks on campus. We park them on Boone, which is pretty narrow. Mm-hmm. So we could maybe partner with the city to have the food trucks there if they're coming through the association anyway.
Yeah. And that's an idea, like I think we've seen this in other cities too, is that as your bike network improves, bike-based businesses kind of grow, grassroots just appear naturally, like coffee bikes, you know, like kind of like food trucks, but they're off bikes.
Mm-hmm. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. So that's one idea I'm really excited about for Spokane. I think people can get into that because a lot of people ride bikes in Spokane, like maybe not commuting yet, but they'll drive down to the Fish Lake Trail or Centennial Trail. Most people have a bike in the garage. But it'd be fun to see it being used more utilitarian.
Is there a mobility solution that you've seen just kind of fall flat or fail? And then the flip side of that question is, and this might sound dramatic, but is there one that could change our lives? So is there one that kind of had a moment, maybe burned hot and then faded? And then is there one that could really have a really big impact?
Yeah. So the solutions that I've seen fall flat are generally like when there isn't institutional support. Mm-hmm. I think you do need to try things out and like take some risks and start small, mm-hmm. like we did with the plaza over there, and kind of build momentum. But if that momentum doesn't build very quickly and you don't quickly get a team on board and like get some regular funding, it can be really difficult, but I still think it's worth trying. So an example in Salt Lake was we did an open streets event where we closed down a downtown street for a weekend morning and just opened up to walking, biking activities, like a mile and a half. And it happened again for a couple of years and it kind of paused for a year and they're like, oh, it's over. But enough people were still excited about it that it came back. And now it's an ongoing program. It happens every weekend now.
Oh, wow.
Downtown.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it took like, you know, 10 years for it to really take hold. But it took an organization really taking ownership of it. Mm-hmm. So, and I think other things that in the same vein, like that there isn't like an ongoing plan or funding, like the venture capital based ideas tend to be hit and miss where you get this huge round of funding and it's this, you know, flood of this new solution. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out it actually didn't make money. So the company doesn't stay around. So I think of all the bike share companies, like Ofo, I think we saw some of those yellow bikes around town. So, that, you know, they got a lot of funding, but there wasn't a sustainable business plan or, and then there's just all these bikes that are left in the right of way. So I tend to be skeptical of venture capital based ideas.
Yeah.
But, as far as, you know, things that I think can change our lives, I really think this, it's not fancy or technology, but I think this focus on safety, where we're really changing our measure of success for transportation from how many vehicles we get through a street in a given amount of time to how safe is everybody on that street, whether you're walking, biking, driving, taking the bus, and really having that be our measure of success. If people are able to safely get around, people aren't dying on our streets and considering that unacceptable. I think that will change, change transportation in Spokane and across the country. Because it's just more enjoyable to drive too. Like when you're on a street that isn't stressful, that you're not worried about changing multiple lanes, going high speed. It's just a more enjoyable experience. And you're more likely to arrive at your destination safely. Mm-hmm. And it tends to, even though it's not as quick, like in the moment, it's more consistent when you have, you know, kind of more predictable lanes and when there aren't catastrophic crashes that shut down streets with emergency vehicles and fire trucks. Mm-hmm. And what they found in other cities is that people would prefer to consistently have a slightly longer commute, like a 20-minute commute versus a 15 commute, if they could count on it.
Yeah, if it was always 20
minutes. Yeah, I'd rather always know it's going to be 20 minutes instead of like 75% of the time it's 10 or 15, but then it might just get shut down and it'll take me an hour to get home. And so safe streets tend to have that impact of just being more consistent throughput. So it's not fancy or it's kind of the back to the basics idea, but just safe streets I think is gonna change everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I think those are wise words. I think it's right. We can't build on frosting. the like fun flashy stuff. You need a base. And so when those like VC things come in, they're trying to like overlay and like frost a cake that's not there.
Right.
And it sounds really awesome and you kind of drink the Kool-Aid and then you look back like, I don't know if that's right for us.
Right.
Yeah.
But they can really augment things like, you were talking about with parking, like making parking more equitable. I think that's where the opportunity is for those types of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Feels like a hopeful note for us. Kind of. End on a little bit. We have some fun rapid fire questions for you. That's just how we like to end. Before we jump into those, any final like words of wisdom, encouragement, anything?
No, thanks for doing this. I think what's really exciting in Spokane is that there's so many people, you know, contributing and doing their share. I think that's what it takes, is that lots of people with ideas just putting it out there, and I think that builds the momentum. Just more people pushing the boulder up the hill. And I guess right now my general feeling is, keep talking a little bit.
Please. Sorry. No, it's good.
Just to wrap it up, like I feel like we're on like the precipice of kind of a tipping point. Mm-hmm. Like, there are enough great things rolling out right now that it's not going to take a big push to really see a big change in how we get around Spokane. So
yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, that's encouraging.
That's it.
Yeah. All right. You ready?
I'm ready. I thought I might have like stalled enough to read this section.
Too prepared. What is a book that you think everyone should read?
Ooh, yeah. I'm going to have to come back. There's so many going through my mind right now.
Okay. We can circle back.
Yeah.
That's not an uncommon response.
Yeah. Yeah.
Being slightly overwhelmed with
all the options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'll just rattle off a few. One that I read recently is how will you measure your life? Mm-hmm. And I think there are a lot of books out there like this, but the idea is to just kind of start with the end in mind. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you get to the end of a process, in this case, your life, and you look back, it's like, what's your measure of success? Mm-hmm. How do you want to feel about it? So I think that's in general, just a very useful approach. And that book does a good job of simply laying that out. Mm-hmm. I'll come back to that though.
Okay.
The River Why is another one.
River Why?
Yeah.
Okay.
That I think is David James Duncan. It's a book about fly fishing, and it's a novel about growing up in Portland, Oregon, and but just his whole perspective on, and it talks about nature and talks about, you know, family dynamics, but it's just a great book and I think is enjoyable.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think speaking from higher ed, I think I often get wrapped up in like all the nonfiction, and I'm like, gosh, a novel would be just a story. That sounds lovely.
Totally.
Yes. What was the last concert that you went to?
Ooh, that's a good question too. It's been a while. Gosh.
We know Jim's answer was yesterday. Last night.
Totally. It has been a long time. I think it was... I'll have to come back to that, too. I'm trying to...
Okay. Or it could be the like last one you remember.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll have to come back to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite restaurant in Spokane?
I think there are a few... we go to South Perry Pizza a
classic.
Lot. Yeah.
Helps.
Just hard to beat. Mm-hmm. They have a really amazing bike inside there that I like to admire. That's like up on the ceiling almost.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that.
I mean, there.
And then Cochinita downtown for tacos.
Nice.
There are a lot of great options though.
We have so many good options.
Yes, we do.
Yes. How did you get here today?
I pedaled over, on the Centennial Trail, and with snow and ice, with studded tires on, and I just, anybody considering biking in the winter in Spokane, I think it's worthwhile. Yeah.
You're swaying me for sure. How cold is it out today? Like 19 or something?
Oh, I don't know. Like it's down there.
Just, yeah. I
mean, most mornings last week have been 20s.
Yeah. Okay, that's our final one. So finish this sentence. So in 2030, Spokane will.
Ooh, 2030.
Just getting closer and closer.
Closer. That was my first thought.
Yeah.
We should change that.
I think, you know, we're talking about tipping points. Mm-hmm. I think 2030 will be a big tipping point for Spokane in transportation because the Division Bus Rapid Transit line would be open by then.
Okay.
And I think between the City Line going east-west and the Division Bus Rapid Transit line going north-south, I think those two high-frequency transit routes will really change everything, and not just because of the transit, but because of all the active transportation improvements that are planned along with them. These kind of connecting feeder networks, like there's kind of like two models sometimes for active transportation networks. It's like the hub and spoke, you know, where you have all the lines coming into downtown. Mm-hmm. And then there's also like the frayed rope analogy, which you have this main line with all these kind of tendrils shooting out into the neighborhoods. And that's what the Division is planned as. So there's 30, you know, high quality protected bike lanes, hybrid greenways shooting off into the neighborhoods.
It's amazing.
And I think with that open, that will change a lot of things. And the North Spokane corridor potentially would be open by then, mm-hmm. which makes division possible. But I think having that main line through the heart of Spokane is, it's going to, we're going to see a big change.
It'd be huge.
Going back to concerts. I think the last one I saw that was really memorable and enjoyable was Soul Crate Music. It was these white, it was like a white hip hop group from North Dakota.
Okay.
But they're friends of a friend. And so knowing them and seeing the concert was just really fun and really funny. Because they're just so funny.
Yeah. What are they called? Soul what?
Soul Crate.
Soul Crate. Okay.
Yeah.
To give it a listen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
I think I answered all the questions.
I think you did. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I have to say, like, this is not an area that I know a lot about. And I am just even listening to the two of you talk has been like really interesting for me. And even like seeing, I mean, Jim and I have had a lot of conversations, but hearing like this part of your world has also been really interesting. So, yeah.
Well, same. And like, I'll definitely remember what you said about convenience and accessibility being like the main measures. I think it's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for chatting.
Yeah, this is fun.
Yeah.